Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, Senior Bowl is upon us.
Yeah.
It's this weekend. We were just watching practice a minute ago.
Yeah, it's exciting times. Get to see some behind-the-scenes stuff that I didn't think we'd be privy to. ESPN has got Patricia mic'd up a couple of days, and so it's been pretty interesting. It's led to some interesting conversations, and it's you can see, you know, a little bit of who he's paying attention to and who he's not, even though obviously your ESPN's jumping all over the place, so you can't always just follow who's Patricia's watching, but it's interesting to watch him interact with different guys and then give different types of instructions to different types of players.
This is your own personal version of Hard Knocks, isn't it?
Kinda, because
it's what you'd prefer over Hard Knocks.
Yeah, you know, they...
That Hollywood-produced drivel.
For the people who are in Mobile, they are right up close. And I really wish I had a chance to go this year. Unfortunately, it did not work out from a obligation standpoint. And Jeff went in stay of Lions Wire, and I stayed back and kind of controlled the fort from back here while he's down there gathering all the information. And I got some more information than I was expecting, which was nice. And then Jeff, he's right up on top of the action, whereas in Allen Park, we are set a little bit further back. We don't get to hear the conversations as detailed. So there's a lot of neat things that we got that came out of this week that we don't normally get.
All right. So one thing we thought we'd have in place by this week was having the whole coaching roster filled out for the team.
Yeah.
And at this point, three coaches' positions remain open: tight ends, linebackers, defensive backs. And then it's a little concerning that they haven't filled linebackers or defensive backs yet.
Now, I think there's a lot of people who feel it's a pretty big deal that you're going in without your position coaches, and then there's another group of people that feel like it's not that big of a deal that that they didn't have them. Do you have a group that you fall into? Do you feel like it's a big deal or not a big deal?
I don't know. I'm guessing it's not a big deal. I mean, unless they end up with drafting and undrafted free agent signings of like 10 guys from the Senior Bowl, it would probably be better if those guys were around and saw a little bit more of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess I will always sit on the side of, well, you'd rather have the people there and try to gather as much information as possible, be there.
Mm-hmm. Right? They, the Lions have 20 coaches in positions right now. Actually, I think it's 19 because they had Jeff Davison came down.
Coach emeritus.
Just to help out, yeah. And then they had a couple of quality control people in different spots, and then we'll get into that in a second. But they had enough coverage. They have enough people. They're going to add three more people at some point.
But these are high-level people. These aren't the bottom of the 20 coaches. No. They're sitting in the top half.
I agree. I agree. And while I do agree, there are some disadvantages, and it is a bit of a missed opportunity. I'm not overly upset about it, just from a personal standpoint, just because they're not teaching scheme, they're just teaching techniques. And so while it would be nice to have position coaches there to, like you said, build relationships and you know, get to know these players a little bit better so that they can speak on it, the Lions have an enormous amount of people there that are going to know enough about these players and have a lot of relationships where I think they'd be able to overcome like a situation where if they have a Senior Bowl linebacker who doesn't get drafted, I don't think a position coach would be like the make or break point in whether he would want to come to the Lions. I think there's a lot more to it than goes into that. But I see both sides of the fence on this. For me though, I wasn't overly concerned. I would rather have the right players in play, or the right, you know, coaches in place. We felt like they were rushed when they hired the last set of coaches. So if they want to take their time, that's fine. But I get the people that are disappointed.
All right, so Brandon Kerr's got a question. Who's running the tight end, linebacker, defensive back drills? Who did they brought in to do that?
So previously we talked about Ben Johnson possibly becoming the quarterback's coach, because if Ryan were to go over to Carolina, which he didn't, right? We talked about that last podcast. Well, Ben Johnson, who we said is a former quarterback, he's coached receivers in the past. And so he ended up coaching tight ends this week. It was a very natural transition. I think he's a guy they might even be considering for the tight end's job as it is, because they like to, you know, build these guys up from inside the organization. And he's been with the organization for a while. So it's very possible this was like a tryout for him. Hey, you're up for the tight end's coaching job. Let's go to the Senior Bowl. Let's see how you do with the Senior Bowl kids. And then we'll weigh that in, and if we want to offer you the job or not, or if we want to keep you in a different capacity. So it could have very well been a tryout for him. Now, with the defensive backs, it's the same thing. Steve Gregory, who we said we very well could expect to be the secondary's coach, he was coaching the secondary, just kind of as we expected. The one that caught me off guard a bit was Stephen Thomas, the defensive quality control coach, who was a former linebacker. I thought, for sure, if you're going to have Ben Johnson do tight ends as the quality control guy, you're going to have your defensive quality control, the guy who's a former linebacker, do the linebackers, right? Well, no, he didn't. Instead, they had David Carraro, who's a former college defensive coordinator.
Director of Football Research.
Yeah, so he's...
Nice made-up title.
Well, he's part of Patricia's crew.
So what's he researching? Other people's defense? The Patriot defense?
Whatever they need. So Patricia has...
Not doing the greatest job.
Patricia has three coaches that are assigned to him for specific tasks on a week-to-week basis, okay? Kevin Anderson is like the main guy who's under him, who's basically his right hand, follows him around everywhere. And then Carraro is another one who's the research aspect of it, and then there's a third guy. I'm blanking on his name right now. I apologize for that. But those three guys all kind of work and do like the odds and ends things that Patricia wants done on a specific week. So he took over for linebackers this week, and he was doing a few different things down there. So we saw coaches that had different titles chipping in order to help out. And like I said, Jeff Davidson came in and helped out, although he wasn't running the offensive line drills. Hank Fraley was still running the offensive line drills, and he ran them the whole week. So this is very much Hank Fraley's offensive line now. He's the coach. Yep, that's his job. He's the coach. He's doing very well at it. All the reports back are very good about him. But Davidson was there in kind of a supporting role to help out wherever he could with the different practices and the aspects of practice. So he stepped away, but they offered him to us if you want to come down for one more time, and he did. They offered to Pasqualoni as well, and he declined it. He had something else to he had other
sure,
obligations.
He had something else to do.
Well, other obligations, right? So that's how they covered it. I mean, they covered it with other people that are on staff that these players are going to know. You know, if they end up with the Lions, they're going to know these guys anyways for different reasons.
All right, Mike Holloman's question is, the most important coaching hire left for the Lions, the replacement for Nash, the strength and conditioning coach. Seems to me like we can't seem to stay very healthy in the past few years.
I mean, that's fair. I do think that that's an important role. Is it the most important? It's debatable. I've been talking about the linebackers coach being a very important role for the last 2 months now, it seems like. So I might still lean towards that linebackers role, but I do think there's an argument to be made that that's definitely a very important hire coming down the pipes here.
All right, let's flip over and start talking about the Pro Bowl. Kenny Golladay called up to his first Pro Bowl.
Yeah, it's good for him. He was an alternate. There was an injury, and then with that injury, opens the door for a receiver. Galladay's next in line, and away he goes. Him and Darius Slay are down there. Slay's in his third consecutive year, and we're seeing him post on Lions social media a lot, taking pictures, talking about how Kenny should have been here the whole time. Darius is participating in skills challenges down there. This is becoming old hat for him, while Golladay being more of a he's not as eccentric, I guess, as Darius Slay is. You can see him kind of like hanging out. Yeah, right. So the skills challenge is actually tonight. So this is Thursday. So if you didn't if you're listening to this on Friday, or even if you listen to it tonight, then ESPN 9 o'clock. I'm sure there will be plenty of replays that they'll show between now and the Pro Bowl on Sunday. So if you want to check out Darius Slay doing some of those things, that should be a fun and entertaining, because he's very much a character, right? And we all enjoy that.
All right, back to the Senior Bowl. Here's a little Senior Bowl preview. Patricia and Bevel were mic'd up. You already mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. One of the key things that I think set people off enough is, or maybe they were taken aback by, is he's a sailor, and he likes to swear. And the ESPN dump button for his swearing was getting worked overtime. And as hard as that ESPN guy was working, they still had some F-bombs sneak through into the broadcast. He was very excited, very high energy, very loud. But they bleeped a lot of what he had to say, because that's how he talks on the field, right? And that's how coaches are, and we know this, right? We've talked about this in the past.
You've been yelled at by a man in a windbreaker before.
but, you know, I'm not, this is just different. He's not Jim Caldwell, who never swore. But, you know, some people don't like it. And I understand that.
I understand people who don't like it, especially if you're watching and you want to kind of hear what he's saying.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they have to bleep half of it. And I'm sure ESPN's not the biggest fans of it.
Sure.
The NFL head off, league office is probably not the biggest fans of it.
So the one thing that was, look at John Gruden in Hard Knocks. I mean, he did it. He was same thing.
There's no, he's not the only one in this boat.
For sure.
I know that.
But one of the things that stood out, and that I actually wrote an article on this morning, and I know you didn't read it, so I'll try and...
I did not. That's not a slight at you. No, I was busy working.
It's okay. You got to work. Yeah. I'll present this to you as I wrote it, or as best as I can here, and then I want to get your take on it. I have a feeling your reaction will be what a lot of people's reactions are. So here's what happens. He is watching an edge rusher, Alden Robinson from Syracuse, who is in a one-on-one pass rushing drill, and he ends up like dropping down to a knee because he gets out leveraged, and Patricia calls him over and he wants to show him a technique that you can use in order to gain power and leverage. And it's one that Trey Flowers uses all the time. It's where you're using the palm, the lower palm part of your palm, and you get it into the offensive lineman's shoulder, and you try and get up on underneath his shoulder pad and to push him back.
They called for illegal hands to the face.
Right. That's exactly what he got called for. Right. So you put your hands on his shoulder and you extend your arm and you use your length in order to create separation between you and the offensive lineman. This power move then allows you to set up a secondary move to create like a pass, if you're rushing a passer. If you're playing against the run and you're holding him in this same move, you now can control your gap by controlling the offensive lineman. And so it's a standard move that the Lions do. A lot of two-gapping teams do this. But he's talking about power, right? And he says, I've seen you do this on tape, Robinson. This is what you got to do. And then he swears, so they beep it out. And then it comes back and he's talking, and then he says something about hand placement, and then they beep it out again. And when they come back from the beep out, Patricia says, no one that rushes the passer well in the NFL uses finesse. Everyone uses power, or it's all power. So he's basically, as he's walking away from Robinson, this is what he says. And there was a very big reaction from people saying, this is why the pass rush is so poor, because you don't think finesse wins when very obviously
you don't explore other options.
Correct. And then I pointed out that earlier in the day with Bradley and I from Utah, he had the same conversation talking about using the arm to create leverage. But then with Anai, he took it a step further where he said, then you can, Anai asked him a question like, what if this arm comes like this? And he said, then you club and then rip. So it's a secondary
swim
move. Well, almost. Yeah, right. So
that's kind of going away.
It wasn't even, I think it was a club chop, if we're going to be accurate here. But this was illustrating how you can use power to set up finesse. And this is a staple in the Lions defense. They rely on power to the nth degree. They care more about power than they do about finesse. And that may be a flaw. And when you look around the league, in a lot of systems, it's the opposite, right? And it's one of the reasons why the Lions sack numbers aren't always going to be as high, because in the two-gapping scheme, you're creating power to assess the situation, to realize, do you have to hold your gap or are you going to make your pass rush? And then where do you go? But it all stems out of a power concept. And so I tried to explain, this works when you have people that are able to create power.
Sure.
But
J.J. Watt.
Right. But last season, you lost Deshaun Hand, who's excellent at this. And then Snacks, almost his power, what he was getting dominated at times. And like his power is what made him so good in this defense went away. And that's why he struggled. And that's why he's contemplating retirement, because the power aspect is gone. And so when we look at these,
he's not going to finesse anybody that Snacks Harrison.
Correct. So when you look at this quote, no one that rushes the passer well uses finesse. It's all power. Initial reaction or gut reaction on that?
Well, you know, we just had this discussion before we started that I'm from the, I watched a lot of clips of NFL films growing up, and a lot of it's Deacon Jones.
Right.
And that's a whole lot about power when it comes to pass rushing. Well, I guess at first blush, when I do, I'm always a big fan of there's many ways to skin a cat.
I agree.
That's how I feel in particular. Is Patricia right? Maybe. I don't know. I guess I got to look at the sack list. Like Dwight Freeney, although he was like, now he no longer plays in the
league.
He's
all finesse. He's one of the few that could be all finesse all the time.
But he also had great leverage
and
everything. But, you know, he pops to mind. But as far as, current, he might be right. But I don't think that's the only answer, but he was trying to get his point across to a specific player who could use power to his advantage, so I do understand why he would say something like
that. And that was my understanding, and that's the way I read it, is I read it as he's trying to hammer home
this
point.
One guy.
Yes.
He's not making a statement to the nation.
But he's mic'd up on ESPN, and the nation heard it, and so there's a lot of people that are very upset about this. And I don't think that he
people
thinks...
People got to grow up on that one.
Well, I agree.
I'm not a Patricia fan, but I don't have any problem with him saying that.
Okay. Now, and I agree with that. I think he was coaching an individual player on how to do something, and that... we've now kind of overreacted on it is part of their concept, and it is the primary part of their concept. And when we look at players, we need to look at players that can do power before finesse. Like, that's part of the evaluation process. But to think that they only do power and not finesse, or to think that he's pushing that, I think is a bit of a overreach.
All right, Brandon Kerr and Daniel Reese asked similar questions. Who was Patricia more interested in teaching one-on-one, linebackers or defensive linemen?
When they cut to him, he ends up spending more and more time with like pass rushers and linebackers. Just, I think, the timing of when they showed him. Like I said, I wasn't there, so I didn't get to see him during the non-camera time. So maybe he was leaning one way more or another. But, I saw him spend a lot of time with specific players. Strobridge, the defensive end / defensive tackle from North Carolina. I saw him spend a lot of time with Bradley Anai, who we've talked about in the past. They showed clips of him talking to Anai twice on each of the broadcast days. Benai's teammate in an off the ball linebacker. I am blanking on his name right now. Francis Bernard. And then the Cal linebacker got some love from him. And let's see. There was probably a couple other defensive lineman guys that got it. But that just seems – that's just what Patricia did. You know, like if when you look at like who was the defensive line coach focusing on, he spent time with Gallimore, who's one of the better – defensive tackles in this class. He'll probably use my defensive tackle number three behind Kinlaw and Derek Brown. That would be, you know, you want to read between the lines on that. He could have been very high on him. Like he was mad at him on one thing and then patting him on the back the next when he was coachable. So it's kind of hard to tell if he was favoring one just because we do have a limited viewing.
All right, the other question they both kind of tag team on, which safety popped out to you?
Now, again, I wasn't there, so I'm limited to the camera angles. But based on the people that I've talked to and some of the articles that I've read, the Kyle Duggar, the safety from Lenore, he's the safety slash linebacker slash kick returner.
Yeah, sure.
He is a small
Division III.
But he's just a little bit shorter, but about the same size as Miles Killebrew, so he would probably fill a similar role as Miles Killebrew, maybe more of a slot cover guy, I guess. But he's faster too. He's got some nice, like I said, he's in on punt returns and kick returns right now, so that seems to be the guy that most people were talking about, safety-wise.
All right, Jake Boltema asks, what players do you think they're falling in love with already and might make a priority to draft?
Yeah, again, I think both the Utah linebackers and Anai and Bernard jumped out at them. I'm blanking on – can you tell me the Cal linebacker's name?
Evan Weaver.
I didn't have him very high on my list.
No, you don't.
And he jumped out to me. So he's probably going to move up a little bit for me. He's just a tick under, like a pound under what they prefer at 240, which is not a big deal. He's basically like the same size as Jared Davis. He is a very smart player. I just didn't know how effective he was, I guess. In this scheme where they were running basically like a modified 3-4, he was playing like an off-the-ball Mike or Will, and he read those gaps and attacked like crazy. It was very impressive. He would be a sleeper guy. Like I said, I like both those Utah players. I even like their nose tackle, but he didn't play. He was injured, Fatu. The other guy's the Michigan guy, Josh Uche. He dominated this week. He was almost unblockable because of his quick twitch speed off the edge. And he showed the ability to cover as well. He was running step for step with tight ends. He checked in at 6'1", 241, which is the perfect size for an off-the-ball linebacker. But the fact that he's also a very capable edge rusher makes him very appealing. So he's a lot like Tavai in the fact that he could play multiple roles. But the roles that he can play are roles that they don't really have on this team right now, and specifically in this linebacker core. He would be a guy who fits the profile, has the long arms. He has over 33-inch arms, so that will help. That helps him on the edge. But he can play multiple spots and cover, which is something they very desperately need. I have him as a third rounder right now. I'm wondering if he jumps up a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Now, the Lions' third-round pick is basically a second-round pick, right, in the grand scheme of things.
Yep. Third pick of the second
round. So maybe would they gamble if they were targeting him? It'd be very interesting to see how high his ceiling rises. Combine could really send him through the roof if he tests out as well as we think. Those guys are really just they were the guys who stood out for me. On the north side. Now, Kinlaw on the south side just came in and just rocked the place. He was unblockable. Checked in at 6'5", 315. They prefer arm length of over 34. He went over 34 and a half. He's a monster. He's cut. He's got ridiculous length. It's he was so difficult. They were trying to run block him, and he was pass rushing on their run blocking. Like it was, he was just using pass rushing moves to put these guys in on the ground in front of him. It was startling. Now, there's maybe one offensive lineman in this at the Senior Bowl who will go in the first two rounds, right? Or maybe the first 50 picks, and that's Josh Jones of Houston, and he was on the north side, so he didn't ever face off against Kinlaw. Actually, Cushenberry, the center from LSU.
Cushenberry.
Yeah, Cushenberry had a couple of – he was had some good reps against Kinlaw, but Kinlaw was so big and checked off so many boxes on what they want, and he has such a high character, and when you talk to him, he just gets it. He's a guy that I seriously think they're going to start considering.
He's becoming your guy.
He's a guy I think they're going to consider at three. And if they trade back, they're going to consider him too. We've been talking so long about Derek Brown being a foregone conclusion at three.
I mean, just in general.
Oh, like the all of us. Yeah. Like
the royal we.
And I've been trying to say, we've been hinting at this for a while. Kinlaw's not as far off as you think, and if he tests out right, he's going to be in that mix. I'm not ready to rule him out. For me, he's just as much in the mix as Derek Brown right now. And I think Neville Gallimore, if they want to wait on a defensive tackle, let's say they go Okuda in the first round, right? Gallimore's a guy they could target in the second if he's there. But Kinlaw, he's a name you need to know.
All right, Arthur's question. I've really liked Bradley Anae, who's edge rusher for Utah, for this team since I've started paying attention to this year's draft.
Mm-hmm.
Anything happening at the Senior Bowl to show you that he isn't a good fit?
One thing, his arm length. They prefer arm lengths of at least 33 inches, and 34 is even better. The only pass rusher that has an arm length under 34 inches is Devin Kennard. And Kennard's is like 33 and a half. Anae, his arms are only just a shade under 32.
He's got Tyrannosaurus Rex arms.
So he's under. Well, he's not that tall either. He's only 6'3".
Probably his normal arm.
But the thing is like Anae's 6'3", Uche's 6'1", but Uche's arms are 33 and a quarter, whereas Anae's are 31 and 7/8". But when you factor in like their wingspan, They end up leveling out pretty close to one another. Uche's is a little bit bigger, but because Anae has a little bit more height, if I'm going to knock Anae for anything, that's it. The arms. Other than that, I thought he showed well. I don't think his star is as much on the rise as Uche's because Uche showed that ability to cover, whereas Anae is more of a straightforward jack pass rusher. But Anae is a guy that I've been a fan of for a while now.
All right. Mike Holloman. Now we're going to move to the draft. Mike Holloman's question. Writers and scouts are often asked to compare prospects and their styles to current former NFL players. What goes into this assessment, and do you enjoy doing it?
Sometimes. Sometimes not. The big thing that goes in is you're just looking for, like, where do they win, right? The hardest thing to do is to like try and ignore the bad parts of a player's game and instead try and look for those positives. And so many people get caught up in the negatives, but when you're comparing them, the big thing is you should be comparing them stylistically, not like what is their ceiling, right? You shouldn't be saying like, Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State is 5'11". 201, which is almost exactly the same as Golden Tate, and he plays exactly like Golden Tate, but his arms are a couple inches longer than Golden Tate. So I said, you know, he's Golden Tate with longer arms. But I call him Golden Tate because he plays like Golden Tate, not because I think his ceiling is to go in the early in the second round and be a coveted free agent. I mean, he could do that, but I'm comparing him more from a stylistic standpoint. So that's the key, right? Is you're not saying, I might say like this tackle looks like Orlando Pace That doesn't mean I'm thinking he's a Hall of Famer. That means I think stylistically that's what he looks like.
All right, next question comes from David Alexander. What off-season roster advice would you give to Quinn? Not about specific players necessarily, but where to find positional value with a win-now mandate. Do they draft positions that historically are more apt to contribute as rookies?
You know, I think you're getting now to a point where most positions can contribute early as rookies. I think your biggest need is at pass rusher, and when you're picking this high, getting a pass rusher is pretty vital. And the earlier you can take a pass rusher, the odds are they have a higher degree of being successful. Every pick that goes by that they don't get them, their success rate actually goes down. So if they are looking for an interior pass rusher with that pick at 3, because that's a weak spot, I would say take it. And then I'd say look at Kinlaw and Brown and tell me which one fits better. I like the idea of corner because that has both short-term and long-term impacts. But again, if you're in a win now, you're either taking a corner in Akuda at 3 or you're probably waiting because you've got other guys on your roster that can do what any other guy can do that you're going to get in round 2 and beyond. So I'd focus more in the trenches, specifically on the defensive side of the ball early, or then get to your pass rushers again in that first or second round. And then at receiver, because there might be 20 receivers that go in the first 100 picks. Almost all of those guys are going to be immediate contributors. So I would say if you're looking for a guy that's going to get in now and you're going to have, again, short-term and long-term need, those are the areas that I would be targeting. So defensive line, pass rusher, wide receiver all make a ton of sense for contributing immediately.
Tony asks, I get confused when I hear a defensive player, quote, fits Patricia's scheme perfectly, unquote. I thought most teams don't play in a scheme like his. Is a cornerback a good fit for the scheme just because he's good in press coverage? Can you elaborate more on what it is meant when this is said?
With corner, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you can play press, you're going to be successful in this scheme. But it's going to vary by position. You want defensive linemen that are long. You want defensive linemen that can use power, like we've been talking about. They want offensive linemen who are long, and they want offensive linemen who can move laterally quickly, right? So their offensive blocking scheme, you have a specific body type and a specific athletic profile that you're looking to fit. So, and it goes, that goes for all the positions. So yes, you might have a guy who can fit like multiple schemes because they're athletic or their experience is in multiple schemes. Like they can play zone and off coverage, let's say, but it's all about like, do they hit the markers for the role that they have? Like with Isaiah Simmons, we talked a little bit about him last week. In Patricia's scheme, I believe he would be a safety. But in a 4-3 scheme, he might be a Will or Mike off-the-ball linebacker. But I don't think he's a linebacker in this scheme. So it's all about what role they're going to play on this specific defense.
All right, Greg Warren asks, Quinn has always talked about how the draft is not just for this year, but for future years as well. Well, this year is an exception. How does the potential of Snacks' retirement impact the Lions' plans in free agency and the draft? Knowing he's likely not here in 2021 regardless, do they emphasize a young defensive tackle?
So
depending on how they look at the mandate.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah. Now, Quinn did say at his end-of-the-year press conference that he has to look at both short-term and long-term. He said that. I think the short-term is more pressing, though, than it typically has been in the past, which means where he's picking and as high as he's picking, he's probably looking at the first two picks to start, whereas in the past, probably didn't need those first two picks. Probably needed the first one, and then you can bring the other ones along slowly, where they're starting, you know, by back half of the year or something like that, right? But now I think there is a little bit more pressure to get players that can contribute and play significant snaps right away. Now with Snacks, though, one, you could go in free agency and you could get someone, or or you could address it in the draft. It really depends on where they think he's going. I do think he might not be here in 2021. So they may be looking at another defensive tackle, like a nose tackle. There's a couple really good nose tackles in this draft that they could get, like in the third or fourth round. That could be a Snacks Harrison starter and take his place in 2021. But they probably have to spend a third or fourth to get them. Or, you know, that's part of the appeal of Derrick Brown. He could play next to Snacks now and take over Snacks' spot the next year, and then you move Hand up more in the rotation, or you draft another guy. Like, it's really kind of hard to say until we really know what's going on with Snacks, unfortunately.
All right, Tom Wilkinson asks, who do you think is more disruptive on the interior, Javon Kinlaw or Derrick Brown? Brown seems more well-rounded and able to two-gap effectively, but in terms of pure disruptive presence, who do you prefer?
So they win in different ways. Kinlaw is a guy who's going to get past his blocker and into the backfield in more of a three-technique traditional role. Brown can reset the line of scrimmage by using his power, by basically just taking the offensive lineman and pushing them back in towards the quarterback. So they disrupt in different ways. I do think Brown is probably a better two-gapper. Brown is probably better against the run, whereas Kinlaw is better against as a pass rusher. But I don't think the other roles, like their role twos, are that bad for either guy. I do think Kinlaw can still play against the run. I do think Derrick Brown still has some pass rushing chops, but I don't think he's not as good as Kinlaw in getting past guys. Whereas Kinlaw, he was never really asked to sit and anchor a spot like Brown has. So it's a I do think there's some pluses and minuses to both. I don't have a... If you're talking you want a guy who can just get in the backfield, then you want Kinlaw instead of Brown. That's that. If you want like traditional disruption.
All right, Jason Hatch asks, is it crazy to consider taking an edge not named Chase Young at number 3 overall? Epinesa, Chaseon, etc. aren't going to be there in round 2, most likely.
So, I don't think Chaseon will be there in round 2, but I don't. Again, Epps, gosh,
AJ,
you know
Vanessa.
What? Yeah, he just. I was just told how to pronounce his name, and I'm still getting it wrong.
Epinesa.
Thanks. I'm not ruling him out at 3 yet. Again, he's not at the Senior Bowl because he's a junior, so people are kind of forgetting about him. But he is a bigger version of Trey Flowers. And having Flowers, him, and Hand is potentially equally as disrupting as getting a guy like Kinlaw or Brown on the interior, because of the fact that Trey Flowers can also kick inside. So I'm not ruling him out at 3 yet. And if they are interested in a trade, I'm not ready to rule him out. So there's 3 defensive linemen, not named Chase Young, that I think are all still in the mix at 3.
All right, Corey asks, is trade down less likely because of the worry of Tua's injury? I'm seeing more reports of teams more worried about his injury than media and fans.
Sure. The rumor in Mobile this week was that NFL teams are legitimately concerned about Tua's hip. The thing is no one has his medicals. No one has seen his medicals. No doctors have talked to these teams. So it's all speculation, and it's lying season right now. So I don't think we're at a point where we're ever really going to know what the NFL thinks of Tua until his name either gets called or doesn't get called at pick number 3 through 5. I still think there's enough quarterbacks that are appealing that there's still going to be options to trade down. But if Tua's injury is significant, it does take a little steam out of the Lions' trade potential.
All right. Speaking of that, Detroit Lions hopeful asks, do you think there's a chance the Lions will take Tua at 3? Mm-hmm. Or at least make it seem like we're very interested, so a quarterback needy team has to make us a big offer to trade for our number 3 pick?
I think they can still sell it that they're interested. I don't think they actually are. But I think they're going to do their best to sell it. That's for sure.
All right. Medwin Evans asks, if the Lions manage to trade down from 3, could it make more sense to draft one of the top wide receiver prospects and look to become an elite offense rather than trying to patch up the defense? As currently, I have more faith in Bevel to run the offense than Patricia to run the defense. So that's a fair point.
I don't hate this idea, and I'm not the only one that doesn't hate this idea. The rumors have been swirling for a while now that if a team trades up with the Lions for 3, it might be for Tua, but it might be for Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver from Alabama. He's so good at so many different things, and his ceiling is so high that he's a surefire. He should go in the top 5. That's the rumor right now. Is teams are very interested in going up, almost like a Julio Jones type. I got to go up and get this guy because he has that type of game changing potential. The Lions do not have a receiver signed beyond 2020. I would not rule out taking Jeudy at 3. It would drive...
Yeah, the fans would go nuts.
A lot of people would go nuts. Not
be happy.
There's a few people that would be ecstatic. Mm-hmm. And putting him with Marvin and Kenny would be pretty scary. They would be very hard to stop. I don't hate the idea, but I don't think that's the direction they're headed. But I don't hate it, and I'm not ruling Jeudy out. That's for sure.
All right, Alex Stahl, if the Lions trade down to 5 or 7, or 5 through 7, for, say, 2 additional second-rounders, who do you select for the team's top 4 selections? What positions do you focus on?
So the big thing with me is, again, I'm looking for a interior defensive line penetrator. I'm looking for an edge rusher. I'm looking for a wide receiver. Those are my top kind of 3. Maybe an offensive tackle or guard falls into the mix, because that's going to be something that they're going to need down the road, and potentially even someone to start. Yeah, depending on who they sign, right?
Graham.
Yeah, right. So I could see that being in the top 4. As far as names, it's really early. You know what I mean? And I don't know what order I would put them in. It's something I'd have to think about and talk to Alex about down the road here. But yeah, I think based on the talent in this class and the needs, those 4 spots make the most sense to me.
All right, Alex's other question. Who are 3 linebacker fits for the Lions in the draft this year?
So the top guy is Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma. He's my number 1. He's a guy that I think is going to be potential first rounder. After him, it's Zach Bond. Zach Bond out of Wisconsin. Yeah, he's a lot like Uche, where he can both pass rush and he can cover. Difference here is his arms are only 31 inches, whereas Uche's are 33. That gives Uche an advantage on the edge, whereas this puts Bond in more of an off-the-ball linebacker primarily, where he would be more of a situational pass rusher on third down. Their roles would be very similar, I believe, but I do think Bond would be more of an off-the-ball primarily guy in Detroit. So he's my number 2. After that, Malik Harrison from Ohio State's number 4. Malik Harrison's number 3. Logan Wilson's my number 4. Those are my top 4 right now. I do think Evan Weaver from California is deserving of another look from me. And it'd be interesting to see if he jumps ahead of maybe Logan Wilson. Because I do like what I see out of Logan. But I was so impressed by Weaver. I got to take a harder look at him.
All right, 517 Bulldog asks, your thoughts on Marlon Davidson so far during the Senior Bowl practices. Would he be a day 2 guy for the Lions? Maybe go Jeff Okuda in the first round, then Davidson in round 2.
So Davidson only practiced one day, and then he was hurt himself, and then he was out and in a walking boot after that. He's would be, in my opinion, he would fit under the big defensive end role, which is the guy who plays everywhere from the seven to the three technique, basically what Deshaun Hand and Kevin Strong do. I don't see him as a second rounder. He could maybe be a third rounder. He might even slide a little bit more than that, in my opinion. I'm not as super high. I have him as like a top 100 guy right now, but I don't know how far up he will rise beyond that. But I think two would be early for me. But he's having another Deshaun Hand like player, I think, could do some benefits, especially if you don't take Kinlaw or Brown early, and then maybe you miss on Gallimore. Then you're starting to look at, I think, Davidson and maybe in the third along with a few other guys.
All right. Jimmy Jimenez asks, what are some realistic free agency plus draft options to replace Snacks if he does retire in the coming weeks? Do you think a Snacks retirement moves the needle on whether they re-sign A'shaun?
So I don't think that they're going to re-sign A'shaun if Snacks retires, because A'shaun did his best work when he was playing next to Snacks. When Snacks struggled, A'shaun struggled. In free agency, Chris Jones would be the ideal one, but he's going to cost a fortune. A guy like Jordan Phillips from the Bills could be a nice addition to bring in. Danny Williams with the Patriots has played this exact role for them in the past. So, again, they might be looking his way. Those are the...
Danny Shelton,
thank you. Those are the kind of key guys that I think can fill, like, the nose role. There's some other free agents, but I don't think... You know, if you're talking about a guy who could step in immediately, those are the key ones. As far as in the draft, there's a couple of guys like Jordan Elliott from Missouri or... Leaky Folk too from Utah, who are kind of on that top 100 range. Ross Blacklock and what's the guy's name from Ohio State?
Devon Hamilton.
Thank you. Hamilton was with them this week and did very well this week. If he's there in the fourth round, I could very much see them grabbing him in the fourth round, even if they took Kinlaw or Brown early. I could still see them taking Hamilton in the fourth as a long-term replacement.
All right. We'll try to squeeze in a couple free agency questions real fast. Between the numbers, as in a recent interview, Bob Quinn stated, obviously there's going to be some positions that we're going to have to totally redo. If you had to speculate, what positions do you see as total overhauls, and how do you see them being addressed?
It's a good question, because when you look at they've redone – running back, they've redone tight end. They say they're happy with their offensive tackles. They have a center. So guard is a spot that could be redone. They could go after a couple of guards potentially. But again, if you're going to go after guards, why not just re-sign Glasgow and see where you go? But I do think the interior offensive line at guard could be an overhaul. Wide receiver is quietly a potential overhaul because everyone is on a one-year contract. They could extend Galladay, maybe bring back Amendola. Then it doesn't have to become a full overhaul. But, yeah, that could be a spot. They've overhauled their safety, so I don't think it would be that. But it could be that defensive interior that they're looking to overhaul again. You're missing you're potentially losing A'shaun. You're potentially losing Mike Daniels. Snacks could be potentially retiring. And Deshaun Hand was hurt. And so, yeah, you may have to completely overdo the entire defensive interior. So those are the key spots for me, the guards and the defensive tackles. Those seem to me like the most vulnerable positions where they're going to spend a lot of money and draft capital.
All right, Robert Canfield, with the back-to-back years of Kerryon Johnson going down to injuries and the hesitation of giving him a huge workload, do the Lions invest further assets in finding the true workhorse? Past years have went cheap at running back number two and cost them. Mm-hmm. LeGarrette Blount, C.J. Anderson.
Well, I think they're happy with Scarborough as their Blount C.J. Anderson replacement. The trick is are you confident that Kerryon Johnson and Scarborough can stay healthy. And if you're not, running back could be a sneaky need. Like we talked previously, if they were going to go in free agency, they're not going to spend money in free agency, I don't believe. But they might attack a guy like Jordan Howard later in the, you know, in free agency as things prices go down on the running backs, where they might get a reliable veteran. But I could also see them maybe sneak a guy in the draft to try and give them some more stability. But I think they're pretty happy with their 1-2 punch. And I don't think running backs is big a priority, even with the injury history.
Justin Hybers asks, should Bob Quinn look at signing Taysom Hill?
No. He's a restricted free agent anyways. I don't think they would pony up to pay that.
Greg O'Leary, how would free agent linebacker Reggie Ragland from Kansas City fit in with the Lions linebacker core?
He'd fit in very much the same way that Christian Jones does. He had potential to play off the ball linebacker, but also has the potential to blitz off the edge.
Jason Benanti, Brandon Kerr, and Wooden Toon, you already answered part of this. Should the Lions go after another big-ticket free agent like Chris Jones or Jalen Ramsey this year, then focus on other positions in the draft?
So Chris Jones is a guy who's going to command a boatload of money, and I wouldn't be against spending it, but you're talking about spending Trey Flowers-like money, and I don't know if they're willing to do that.
Detroit Lions hopeful asks, how much cap space do you see the Lions really ending up with after having to re-sign or extend their own guys? Mm-hmm. Between extending Slay and Galladay, they're going to get rid of Slay, re-signing Glasgow, Tavon Wilson, Amendola, Wiggins, Logan Thomas, Sam Martin, and Muehlbach, I don't think there's that much cap left.
There is. There's more than you think. And I actually wrote this out on a previous script. And I don't have that updated here, but it's not. They wouldn't lose as much as you think, because the where Slay's contract is, you can extend him, and it's only going to cost a couple more. You can extend Galladay, but then backload the contract, so his pay is only going up a couple. Re-signing Glasgow is the key. We've talked about this. If you want to re-sign Glasgow, though, you're probably cutting Rick Wagner in order to make the cap room for it. Tavon's going to come relatively cheap. Amendola's going to come relatively cheap. These guys are, you know, a couple million dollars, $2-3 million probably. I would be surprised if they went over 3.5 for either of those guys. Same thing with Wiggins. Logan Thomas is a million or less. I think they're moving on from Sam Martin. Muehlbach costs a million. And then when all that shifting might seem like a lot, but it's really not, because they've already got some of this accounted for in the cap, and you can, by the way that the contracts work, they could probably get a lot of these guys back, and it only costs them like $10 million in cap room, which still leaves them with like 40. So I don't think it's as bad as people think, but I also don't know if the Lions are going to be jumping out of their shoes to throw a whole bunch of money around, you know, especially at these. Like, the Galladay is going to cost some money, but again, I don't know. With Glasgow, we'll see.
All right, last question. Dad Look asks, will Daryl Bevel be the interim head coach by Thanksgiving?
No.
I give him a 50% shot.
I just don't think
50-50 shot.
I think if you say this is a year that we're giving, that we're, it's a win now, I don't think they're going to pull the rug on him halfway through the season.
If they're like 1-7, they're going to be like, eh, we'll see you later, guys.
Maybe. I mean, maybe, but I don't think... I also don't think they're going to be 1-7. Well, but again,
it's
January, right? But yeah,
we don't know how Stafford's back is.
Based on the mandate and that stuff, it sure seems like it's like you're going to get a season and see what you can do with it.
All right, that's it. Got through a lot there.
And we left a few on the table that we'll hold over for later.
We'll have to keep putting them on every week until we get to them.
So the iTunes numbers did not go up, mm-hmm. but we got a review.
That's nice.
So Emerson 22, he or she, whoever they are. Yep, wrote a nice thing about us. And the numbers didn't go up, but the review came through, so that's positive, because those reviews help a lot. And like we've said in the past, even when the reviews don't go up, people are reading the recent ones, and if they read nice things, then that's awesome, and that helps us out a ton.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And we appreciate all the listeners, and we hope all the listeners out there enjoy the Senior Bowl mm-hmm. and the Pro Bowl this weekend, although nobody enjoys the Pro Bowl.
I didn't send this to you.
All right.
But when the Senior Bowl measurements came in, I inputted them all onto my board and sent that board out to all our Patreon subscribers. So all the Patreon subscribers should have
up to date.
Yep, they have. They can go into the Senior Bowl with a fresh list that has everything updated and ready to go.
Yeah, so I hope their Senior Bowl viewing gets enhanced by having that your draft board along with them. And so everybody keep that in mind if you'd be interested in something like that too. But for now, that's all we got for today. And until next time, let's go Lions.